Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Thanks for tuning into Off Camera. Before we start the show, I just want to ask a simple favor of all of you. If you're enjoying Off Camera, and if you take the Off Camera podcast with you where you go and it brings a little sunshine into your day, then take a few seconds, go to the iTunes store, and rate our podcast. If you give us 5 stars and maybe say something nice in the comments section, it would really help more people be able to find us through the mysterious algorithms of Apple. So, if you love our show, give us a rating, tell people about us, and we can try to keep bringing you this thing. Thanks a lot. Now on with the show. Hey folks, Sam Jones here. Welcome to another edition of Off Camera, the show where I get to talk to iconic, creative, curious artists and find out how they got that way. And in this episode, I sit down with actress Keri Russell. After one exhausting 16-hour workday on the set of Felicity, Keri Russell treated herself to a matinee at a movie theater in Santa Monica. A group of girls her age caught her eye, she remembers. They were just a group of friends going on a fun road trip together, and I cried because I wanted that life. I just wanted to be a teenager. Fame and the responsibilities of work are not without their challenges, especially for a girl whose childhood was put on hold after being cast in Disney's Mickey Mouse Club and later in the hit WB series Felicity. As Keri explains, you're supposed to mess up when you're a kid, and it's supposed to be okay. When money is riding on you, you grow up so fast. Keri had the wherewithal to take a break after Felicity and catch up on what she missed. Wandering New York City, reading books, and being a young adult without a hit television show riding on her shoulders. After her hiatus, Keri found the delicate balance between working as an actor and having enough breathing room to be happy doing it. But getting out from under the image of the aspirational, good-natured America's sweetheart, Felicity, proved to be difficult. Keri says, "I certainly played a lot of nice moms for a long time. In my 20s and 30s, there was something about my face that screamed, 'Nice pregnant girl.'" Luckily for Keri, the Americans came along and mixed things up for her, professionally and personally. In the hit FX series, she plays the anti-America sweetheart, a Russian spy, along with her on and off-screen husband, Matthew Rhys. For someone seeking a balance between her work and her personal life, she really nailed it with the Americans, even though you'll never hear her say, "nailed it," after an audition. Keri joins off camera to discuss the creepy factor of being a child actor, what makes her American's character Elizabeth so unique, and how taking her favorite disguises from the show out for a spin can give her a taste of the simple life. So pull up a chair and listen in. Hi, Keri.
Hi, Sam.
Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we've wanted to have you since the show started because I was already a fan of the Americans, and I was told you never leave New York.
And never.
Ever. And you're finally here, and it just took the show ending to get you here.
That's right, yeah.
Is this the first time where you go, oh, I get a chance to sort of breathe and take stock? And
I think there will be a break in the action, but I have taken breaks along the way. In fact, I was on another television show when I was younger, Felicity.
Right.
And
I've never heard of that show, but I'll go along with you.
When that show ended, I took a long break because I just didn't know if I wanted to act anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I'd saved all this money because when you're working that hard, you have no time to, you know,
right.
spend it.
And you have people sending you clothes and
you know,
coffee.
I know. My brother was always so mad about that. He's like, "Why would you get something for free? You have a great job.
You can afford it."
Yeah,
why are we giving these people
they don't need
iPhones
free stuff.
At the Oscars?
That's so true.
Don't they have an iPhone?
They don't need it. I took a long break and moved to New York and, you know, just got to kind of be a kid and, you know, read books and wander the city. And
I could understand the need for a break after an experience like that where you sort of wouldn't, because I would assume you're still sort of trying to define who you are at that age.
Right.
And everyone else has this idea of who you are.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it was more, I didn't grow up desperate to be an actress or, you know, it wasn't something I went to school for. It was something that I was a dancer. That's kind of like the only thing I'm trained in. And I just fell into it. I happened to be at this audition and happened to get it and then just kind of kept working along the way. And then,
wait, tell me about that. So you were dancing. Where were you living at the time?
At that time, I was in Colorado.
And so were you a serious dancer at that point?
I was really into it. It was like my sport. Like I had scholarships at different studios and...
It was ballet?
It was everything. Okay. So I auditioned with a bunch of friends at the dance studio for what was the Mickey Mouse Club.
Right.
On the Disney Channel, and then...
But how did that... If you're living in Colorado, like, that's not like you're in L.A. or Orange County or something.
Right.
How was that show auditioning people in...
I think that's what Disney does. I think they... Sort of, they want normal kids, I guess, and so they go to bigger cities and they just have these massive open calls
right.
where hundreds of kids show up.
And it wasn't like your mom was taking you around to auditions.
No, my mom was like, "What do you want to go to? Are you going to get a ride with someone?" You know, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And was there much of a dance contingent, or was it just they were looking for kids that perform?
Yeah, you basically, it was like a variety show, so you had to, turned up and the guy said, the casting director, Matt Casella, said, you know, sing a song, do a little skit, like have little like nerdy skits, and then like read the copy of the skit, and
right.
then do a dance if you had one. And I'm not a singer. I read the little thing they had and then did my dance. And you know, they chose kids from all over. But then I think there were a few other rounds where they brought in kids and they, you know, narrowed it down.
And at some point, did it go from, oh, this is sort of fun and weird that I got picked to, I really want this?
For that specific job?
Yeah.
Oh, I totally wanted it.
I thought
it was so cool. I mean, by the way, it was so not cool. Like, the cool kids were, like, smoking pot at school, and I was, like, doing bad covers of, like, Debbie Gibson or something. We were like, this is awesome.
Where did they shoot?
Florida.
In Florida?
Disney World.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So when you got on the show, was it a literal awakening to show business in a weird way?
I certainly was new to that world. I didn't know anything about it. But you know what? It was kind of any kid in this business. It's so creepy. I really stand by it. It's like so creepy.
Yeah.
And I know you need kids to be in the, like you need the kid to be, you know.
Occasionally
in
we
the
need
story.
To see kids
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's creepy. Any way you cut it. And I sort of feel like I had the best version of that because...
The best version of creepiness?
The best creepy version because it was 19 kids. So the adults were invisible to me. I was just so into everyone on that show. And we were all so close and they were all so wildly talented. I was... literally the least talented on the show. It's like crazy how talented they were. Everyone could sing. They were incredible kids. And I just thought it was so special and fun. And it was so nice that I wasn't the only kid with all these adults, which is usually what it is.
And right,
like
where
a
you're
really
the stressful. One kid, the token child of the adult story.
Yeah, in this weird way. And so I kind of had an easier go, I think, than most kid actors do.
What was the creepy aspect to it?
I just think it's weird when kids have that much responsibility. And, you know, I was a good student and I was a pretty good kid, but I just think it's not normal. I think when you're a kid, you're supposed to mess up and it's supposed to be okay.
Right.
But if there's money riding on it or, you know, basically I was paying my own rent from 15, which is, I love my life. I'm so thankful for it. But I think... It's weird.
Yeah.
I think it's you grow up so fast, and I think you take a shortcut and miss out on certain things.
What did you miss out on?
Well, I think I gained it when I took that break after Felicity, but I think, I just think you should, like, be able to mess up a little bit more. I think I was so into following the rules for so long, and did you ever see that documentary called Spellbound?
Yes, I did. The Spelling Bee Kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... There's a little bit of that in it. I had first moved to New York, and one of my really close girlfriends, Alana, also lived in the city, who was also on the Mickey Mouse Club, and now is like a big-time lawyer, which is so funny. And I had just walked out of that documentary, and I saw her in the line, and I was like, call me after you watch this. Call me right when you get out. And that's how it felt. Like, there's this weird... stress that like kids kind of like you shouldn't be under
right.
You know what I mean?
It's but you don't know it's not normal, right? So you
right.
assimilate.
Yeah, you assume because that's what you do. You just but I think it's creepy.
Yeah, because there's like a a balance of power that shifts when the kid realizes that the adults are sort of counting on them.
Totally.
Like, did you find that there was sort of an us versus them or a shift in power a little bit?
There is a shift in power, and like, in not a good way, right? Yeah, it's strange. It's like a strange thing that happens. And like I said, I feel like I got out relatively easy. I mean, I'm not turning tricks on the street yet.
Yet? I mean, your calendar is
I
open.
I mean, I do. I have a lot of openings. And, you know, but, you know, I don't know. I would be curious. I haven't talked to my, like, Alana or Lindsay, who was on that show with me. I'd be curious to have that discussion with them now and say, like, wasn't that weird? I don't know. It's just like this, it's a weird stress that I think kids shouldn't have to deal with.
Right.
Or like a kid with a really alcoholic parent, or, you know what I mean? There's different versions of growing up very fast.
Right. Whether it's a privilege or whether it's a deficit, they get thrown into things. They have no idea how to handle it, and they don't know how it's going to be until they get there. That's the thing I think that's hard for kids, is that you get this opportunity and it sounds so great. Who's going to turn it down?
Who's going to turn it down?
And then week four, when you're like, I don't want to work.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, you have to.
Or I'm just having a bratty day or whatever, or a bad day.
Because it wasn't all year, how did you kind of feel about being in two lives, like that you would go do this and be this professional and this celebrity or whatever, and then you'd go back? Because I'm assuming you went back and went to your regular high school.
It's strange because you've dipped into this other world where you're kind of making your own money and you're like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
I want to like...
Yeah, what? Math? I don't need math.
I don't need to do this.
That must be hard because it must make you feel out of place no matter where you are.
I ended up graduating early because you're tutored. So if you're at all a good student, you can just burn through it as quickly as you want.
Do you ever look back and go, I wish I would have like held that part off?
I wouldn't take it back because... like I'm here.
Right.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? And at the same time, as much as maybe I didn't dream of being an actress, I definitely dreamed of adventure, and I feel like I got a lot of that.
Yeah.
And I've traveled the world. Like, at such a young age, I've been able to travel and do these things I've always wanted to do. Or, you know, you go take a job and get to ride horses for those 3 months in the mountains.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? Or there was a job that wasn't my favorite job in the world, but I got to go live in Portland, Oregon for 4 months, and that's what I wanted to do.
Well, I guess the perfect question to a parent would be, would you let your kids do the same path?
No way.
Really?
No way!
What about all the adventure? What about the horses?
They can
Oregon?
Have adventure at 18. They can have, yeah, exactly. They can do horses at 18.
Do you think you narrowly avoided something that could have been a lot worse?
Of course.
You do.
It's so creepy. It's like also just like being a young girl and like there's all these old dudes around. It's just so weird.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't want to be some 16-year-old dating, you know, 45-year-olds. No offense, 45-year-olds, but...
Yeah, no, that didn't happen, did it?
No, but you know what I mean? You're in that world. That's who you're around, which is weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know?
Well, you talked about the talent that was on that show and, you know, Justin Timberlake and Ryan Gosling and Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears. And did you step in there and go, this is my crowd, these are my people, I've found them? Or were you? Did it feel like I'm around these really talented kids? Like, what was the effect of being around really talented kids on you?
I definitely loved being a part of it. I definitely loved it and felt very close friendships. I didn't see myself as different from them, but I knew, like, there are certain things certain people can do that you just can't do. Like, to really sing like some of those kids.
Right.
It was insane. Like, to watch Christina Aguilera as this like skinny little like 12, 13-year-old just killing Aretha Franklin live. You just go, what?
Then she's back in the dressing room being a kid.
Yeah, like eating granola bars or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
When you started being exposed to not only all of these, you know, different sort of talents the kids had singing and stuff, did you start thinking like, what am I going to do next? Or like, oh, I like sketch comedy, maybe I'll go do... Like, did you start to have a plan, or were you just sort of...
I don't think I had any plan.
Really?
Literally. I think I was like, I guess I just want to keep doing it. So I just did.
So you weren't sitting there going, when this ends, I'll do this?
No. I was probably like, how can I make out with that guy? Do you think
he's
he'll make
45.
Out with me? He's only 45. I think he'd be into me.
And how did like you learn about the business then? In terms of like, did they help you find a manager, or did you have an agent, or like who was in your corner and sort of watching out for you?
I think I don't think we had one in the early years, but then when I finished and I moved out to LA, then I got one, I think.
Okay.
I was like 17.
So like what adult was sort of supervising the whole operation?
Exactly. Exactly.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. Or my 45-year-old boyfriend.
You got paid in Red Vines.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was like, fine because they were... you only worked 14 hours a day.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was fine.
No, you make it sound like I wandered into this place. They put me on TV. It was fine. Whatever.
They gave me McDonald's anytime I wanted it. No, my mom was with me. My mom
she
would
was.
Come. And then, but once I moved out to LA, I slept on someone's couch for a while. And then I just lived there on my own.
Was it weird to like be done with that show, be done with high school, have finished early, and all of a sudden just look around and go, oh, wait, I'm an adult?
I think once I was older, I look back and go, oh my God, I was living alone, or you know, with roommates, but on my own basically at 17.
Yeah.
Like I think of some of the 17-year-olds I know now and I think, oh my God.
How did you modulate sort of how to manage yourself?
Well, you know what's amazing? Like I don't think I ever drank alcohol or did, I think all of that happened much later in life because I had so much freedom, so I wasn't trying to gain it.
That's interesting.
So maybe I was wild in other ways, but...
The Disney people brainwashed you. They like...
I know.
They're like, we need her to be a certain version to represent... Like, would they talk to you about that? Like, you're a representative of...
Totally.
Kind of. Was it weird?
Kind of. But I think they chose those kids who could accomplish that.
They could tell.
Do you
tell.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
They did interviews with you. They interview your parents. They want good kids, you know. They don't want pregnant Mouseketeers.
No, that's not good for anybody.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They want, you know, the good kids.
Yeah.
They want nerds.
I would think that handling even those little stretches of fame for a kid, it must have been a weird thing to navigate.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, when you're that young, it's hard to, like, honestly, if I asked you questions about, like, when you were 15, can you really remember them?
Like, well, if it involved me being put in a trash can on Senior Corner, I remember it like it was yesterday. Yeah.
Well, there are certain things you do remember.
I think you remember the trauma.
Right.
Do I remember the times that people wanted my autograph? No, I have no recollection.
You're like, I keep trying to remember those times.
Yeah, they must have existed.
Yeah.
So after you moved to LA, who did you know?
Like the producer's assistant of the Mickey Mouse Club and her sister were living in Studio City and I slept on their couch.
Wow. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
So tell me about those years, like, between Mickey Mouse Club and Felicity.
I was kind of just doing little tiny things scattered, you know, enough to, like, earn my living and do, like, little TV jobs and things like that. And, like, nothing really good, just stuff to get by that was fun enough.
Yeah.
And then Felicity was the first thing I thought, oh, that. I really like this. This is so funny to me. Like, I really get it.
And was that a whole audition process, like, down to...
Totally, the whole thing.
Tell me about that. Like, when you actually decided you wanted it, and then...
Well, I just went, again, it was, like, so many girls. So, like, in fact, I think there were girls, like, lined up through the hallway, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be here for 2 hours waiting to audition for this thing.
So they were looking for an unknown, basically.
Yeah, I think they were looking for anyone.
Right.
Yeah. And I remember sitting there on the... It was back when the waiting rooms had, like, a phone.
Yeah.
You know, because none of us had cell phones. And girls were, like, calling on the phone, like, we were listening to everyone's conversations. I was like, do you want to have that conversation in front of everyone? Okay. We were just all waiting. And then I read it, and I remember kind of then getting down to the wire and having to do all those network, you know, things. And I tend to be pretty nervous.
How does that manifest for you?
I just get nervous. I'm nervous. I'm a terrible auditioner. I think that's such a weird thing to do anyway. You walk into a room and people are just like, do something.
Yeah.
But don't act nervous. just go.
And at that point, does the message in your head come up of, oh, this isn't something I trained for, I'm not an actor?
Like, totally.
Do you in your head?
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Not to this day even, but do you ever think like, oh, I'm not an actress, or I'm not, they're going to find out, or imposter?
All the time.
You do?
All the time, yeah. I think you can still get nervous, but I think if you're trained a little bit more in it, it's less of a mystery. So you go, oh, right, this is the part where I'm going to do this, and this is the part I worked on, so I'm going to do this part. Whereas I'm just sort of like, I guess this works. I don't know, it'll work or it won't, you know?
Right.
So it's a little bit more like feeling my way through the dark.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you're like, ooh.
And when you're younger, you're like, I hope that weird thing shows up, right?
I hope that weird thing shows up. And a lot of times, nerves kind of take over. And in fact, my first big audition for Felicity, I think there were like 5 girls, and we were all standing outside. And we all looked very different. And they were all really, you know, cool girls. And they were saying, oh my God, this story is just so sad. I love it, it's so sad. And I was like, I think it's really funny. Am I missing something? Because it was, I mean, it is sad, but it's hilarious the way it's, you know. And I think there was just something about JJ, his writing or Matt's take on it that I just understood. Like, we understood each other. And I think that helped me get the job.
But when you're in there and 4 people are saying it's sad.
I know, I was like, no, it is funny. Like, it was the first thing that I really was like, oh, I know what this is. Right. Like, I know how to do this.
And so when you get the job, did the gravity of how big it was land on you? Of like, oh, I'm now the lead in this show. And like, in terms of your nerves, your imposter type of thing.
Yeah, well, interestingly, after that big final network, whatever you have to do, test, back before we had cell phones and all that stuff, I walked out of there and I thought, this is going to be a big deal if I get it or I don't. It's kind of like a big deal. So I remember I drove a pickup truck back then, and I drove my pickup truck. I did. And I drove it to this, what to me was kind of like a fancy restaurant. And I had this big steak dinner by myself. And then I went home and there were all these messages on my answering machine saying, where are you? Like, you got the job. But I look back now and I think that was such a funny thing to do. Like, in some way I knew, like, that things were going to be different after this, and I just wanted to take this moment on my own.
And I love that.
But I love that I, like, had this big steak dinner.
By yourself?
By myself.
Like, I just see you as this person out in L.A., you're by yourself.
Yeah. My pickup truck.
And you're just about to either get the biggest news of your life, either positive or negative, and you don't, like, call your friends, or you're just by yourself.
I'm like, I'm going to go, I'm going to have a dinner, and then I'm going to find out what happens.
That's amazing. And think about that pre-cell phone world where
it was
you're
so
at a steak
better.
Dinner, nobody can find you.
Nobody can find me.
You
so
get a chance to live that moment.
Yeah.
Do you think you were almost holding off the moment?
I think that's probably what it was. I think I was like, before I feel it, I just like, I'm going to go have dinner and I'm going to have a moment to myself. And then,
You know, I think I do that sometimes with emails. Like, I'll see an email.
Right.
And it's something I've been waiting to hear about or whatever. And I just go.
I'm going to give it. Yeah, so what is that?
Although now
it's
2 minutes. It's not a steak dinner.
I know.
Right?
I know.
It's like, okay, I've waited long
enough. You lose, in all of the immediacy of everything, you lose all, like, the romance, the longing, and the waiting that is so good about extending things or going on a trip and wanting, you know, or missing somebody. Like, you don't miss anything because you're always doing FaceTime, and it's good to miss things and have separation. And
it's good to take a minute to process it. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, that steak dinner was probably when your life changed the most, right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did that feel like a bigger transition than the Mickey Mouse Club thing in terms of fame being recognized?
Yeah, and I also think because I was the main character, I was sort of in it on my own. It was like, if someone was going to have to do an interview, it was going to be me. And I sort of wasn't good at it anyway. Like, the first time, I just didn't know anything about any of that stuff.
About how to do an interview or how to...
Like, I remember having to go to New York and doing, like, a big round of press. And I had to go on, it was like a daytime show, Rosie O'Donnell.
Okay.
I cried.
On the show?
A tear came out of my eye, live. I was like kind of pretending it wasn't happening, but I was like, I was like, I cried, okay?
Did you cry from nerves or from?
Just like nerves, just being so overwhelmed and nervous. And then I remember feeling like so bad that I failed, that I like cried when I went back to the hotel room and I was like, I didn't do it right. And my girlfriend, Alana, afterwards was like, who cares if you're nervous? Like, you're a normal person. It's weird to be on that show. And you were normal and nervous. And it made me so grateful because it's true. If I see someone when they're nervous, especially on talk shows, which is so unnatural, and
right.
I just go, oh, I like them because they're just normal.
And they're being themselves.
Yeah.
And they're...
Because it's hard to be super, like, unless you're a comedian or... I don't know. Some people are really good at it, I guess. I still get pretty nervous.
Do you really?
I do. And sometimes... You don't. I mean, I definitely, a beer helps, but but like I just did.
What's a backup?
I'd be better right now if I had beer. Can someone get me one? Like I just did Kimmel, who's so nice, but I got nervous. I was like, oh, fuck, here it comes.
I think those shows are so difficult with a giant live audience. You know, you have 7 minutes. All of a sudden,
you're like,
you hear
tell
the
that
music.
Joke, be funny. You're like,
yeah.
Oh. And then I was wearing the shirt, and it was like,
and there's someone with a headset going, okay, 3, 2. Like, how are you not getting nervous?
So uncomfortable.
There's some weird psychopath who doesn't get nervous in that situation.
Totally. And I just go, you're a crazy person.
Yeah.
That's the same person that walks out of an audition and goes, nailed it. You're like, did you? Okay.
I think it's so endearing and revealing when people achieve a great level of success and can admit that they think they still to this day think they can be fired. You know?
Of course, yeah.
Ethan Hawke came in here a while ago, and he had a similar... He was a similar age
fame.
When he sort of found
right.
fame.
Yeah.
And he said that the hardest thing for him was that he never got the chance to make a first impression.
Oh,
again.
Interesting.
Like, did you find that experience of fame at that age
right.
jarring in terms of not being able to come in on your own terms and not feel like the room had an opinion about you?
Back then... I think I was less concerned about how I was perceived in my career and more concerned about how it was affecting me personally. So I don't think I was worried about, oh God, they're never gonna let me play that drug addict. I've always wanted to play a drug addict. You know what I mean? I think I was more like, ugh, I just wanna go somewhere and they don't recognize me or,
right.
you know what I mean?
Yeah, what was that?
I just didn't think
like.
I wanted to be any more famous. I think.
Did it feel like you just had no control over it?
Yeah, and imagine now. Like, that was the olden days.
Right.
You know what I mean? There was no social media.
Us Magazine came out once a week.
Once a week.
Yeah.
Like, thank God someone wasn't following me, taking my picture, like, watching who I was making out with. Or, you know what I mean?
Right, the 45-year-old back in Florida.
Because that was awkward. People would have had issues with that.
Yeah.
Opinions I didn't want to hear. I think it's all really weird now, like what kids have to do. Like there's no room to mess up.
Yeah. I guess there's no way to know what that's going to feel like until it happens. And once it happens, there's no going back from it.
There's no going back.
Right?
Yeah.
Did it feel out of control a little bit?
I was working so much. Like, you know, when we shot that show.
It was like 26 episodes a year?
Yeah, you do like 22, 24 a year.
Crazy.
And... I was basically in every scene, so we would shoot, you know, like 16, 17 hours a day. So it would start Monday morning at 5 a.m., and then you'd finish Friday night by 5 a.m. So I had no life other than that sound studio, that sound stage in Culver City that we were shooting in. And I'm really happy to do it because I loved that job, but it was life arresting for my age. Like, I remember watching these girls, it was like a Saturday, and I was going to see like a matinee or something in Santa Monica, and I remember watching these girls who were sort of my age, like they were just friends, and they were going on some fun like trip all together in a car, and I remember I cried because I was like, I just want that life. I just want to like be kind of like a teenager,
yeah.
sort of, or like a college student, and just fuck off with my friends. And like, there was no room for that right then.
When the show ended, did the pressure get less? Could you kind of?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. I think when you're a kid and you get responsibility too early, mm-hmm. or fame or whatever, probably the only way you can have any control over your career or your life is to say no to things.
Yeah.
Like, did that become sort of the way you dealt with it?
It did. And then it kind of became a prison because I couldn't ever say yes. I was like too afraid to say yes in a way.
Because you had such a successful show to start with?
Yeah. And I got stuck sort of in not working. And I was like too afraid to work again in a way.
What were you afraid of?
I was comfortable in my, like, hiding in my own little world. And finally, a friend of mine said, I think it had been like about a year and a half, and he was like, I thought you were going to take a year off. I said, yeah, I am. And he's like, well, it's been a year and a half. And I was like, I know, but, you know, I'm still trying to figure things out. Like, I don't know, I might go to school, I might, you know. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should try to work again.
And when you came back, like, what was the pressure? Was the pressure that, oh, everyone sees me as Felicity and what I do next? Or was the pressure, I've forgotten how to do this?
Well, I knew I didn't want to do kind of a big TV show like that again.
Okay.
So I think the first big thing I did back, there was an independent film that someone fell out of, and there was a small part in a big ensemble. And I thought, I could try to see how that feels, to do the small part. And if it feels okay, I'll inch my way back in. And if it doesn't, I'll go back to school. And it was this independent movie with Joan Allen and Kevin Costner called The Upside of Anger. And
I remember that film.
Like four daughters. And I was just one of the daughters. And they kind of needed someone who could dance. And someone fell out last minute. And so I did it. And it was awesome because I got to watch Joan, who's so, she's so beautiful and like graceful in the way she moves through life. And I think she was a really good example for me of someone who was doing it, but it wasn't ruining her life, kind of. You know,
right.
I thought she was doing it well. And I thought, she seems happy.
That's interesting, because I think that what you're saying is that you had to find a balance.
Yeah, and I didn't know if it existed. Yeah.
Well, the examples you'd had this example of this weird Florida experience,
right.
And then you go on to this show that was all-consuming.
Right.
You also don't have anyone to really talk to, right?
Right. You're in this weird world, yeah.
Yeah, where you're sort of the expert in the room.
Right. I mean, I guess a lot of people have more famous friends, but maybe I don't have as many as other people do.
The famous people just don't like you.
They don't like me. So, I keep trying.
Yeah. I'm sad for you because
I want more famous friends.
Yeah. Yeah, it's helpful when it comes to the gift bags. No, but I'm curious because your formative experience was so, aspirational, good.
Right.
On television,
right.
Relatable, America's sweetheart. If that sort of felt a little bit limiting to you in terms of how you were going to be seen, when you didn't even maybe know how you wanted to be
right.
seen.
I'm sure people did perceive me a certain way. I certainly played a lot of nice moms for a long time. There's something about my face that like screams nice pregnant girl. You're like, oh, she's a nice pregnant girl.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about me, they're like, we need someone pregnant, possibly in danger, who's really nice. Let's get Carrie. She's the right, she's what we want. There's something about my face that screams that. I don't know why, but like through my 20s and 30s, I did a lot of that.
Was that ever frustrating, or did you ever look at it and be like,
at a certain point, I was sort of like, I'm always a nice mom. But you know what? I think at that time I was also starting my family, and so I didn't work that much. I would take things here and there, and then I was happy to be home and like have my kids.
Right.
Where I probably wasn't as nice of a mom.
So you found a balance though in your own way.
I think after that I slowly started working and just doing little things here and there that nothing really took hold that strong, you know, or there wasn't anything that great. I was just kind of working and nothing I was like desperately in love with, but just kind of working my way through it. And then really focusing on my family. And
right. Yeah. Well, I think that's a great transition to the Americans because she certainly isn't a good mom.
No.
I'm just curious if in your head at that point, you're like, oh, people see me as the good mom and I have this nice balance in life and I can work when I want. Did you initially, when the Americans came along, was it like, oh, I'm not going to get this because I don't play those kind of characters?
I had no idea why John Landgraf wanted me for this part. And I read it. I was like, what is he fucking talking about? Like, why would I be this cold, calculating Russian spy? Like, what, doesn't he want, like, the wife from Rocky? Like, you know, the Russian guy's wife?
Yeah.
Bridget Nielsen.
Bridget Nielsen.
And he's like, no, I really want... So I was like, what?
So initially, was it maybe a no for you?
I think everything initially for me is a no.
Really? So you sort of say no at first and then like...
Always. And I have to be cajoled and like talked into it. Always.
Really?
Yeah. I'm always like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. And then someone will send an email and they'll call and go, you know, you should really think about it. But I just thought the marriage story was interesting. It really intrigued me. And I went and met with Joe and then I kind of said, you know, maybe I could test with some people to see how it feels to do this character, which I don't really know how it's going to work yet.
Right.
And then I went for it, and here I am.
Did it ever dawn on you why you were right for this?
Totally. Yeah. Well, I think what John did was he knew that these characters were going to be doing very unlikable things, and I think what was so great about his casting Felicity in this part or whatever is people have like a preconceived notion about me.
Right.
So I think even though I was doing these terrible things, you somewhere in the back of your mind think, well, she's not so bad. Like maybe I do trust her.
Right. So he took the very thing that other casting directors said, oh, we need a sweet mom.
Yeah.
And we say that's exactly what she needs to play.
Right. I would have discussions with Joe and Joel about kind of the severity of her character. I would say, oh my God, should we make her nicer? Because this is so rough. But no, it's such a fun job. I mean, like, this has been such a good one.
Yeah, I would think that you'd come along and go, oh, I get to do this.
Yeah.
And I get to, like, just the way you said that people have preconceived notion about
right.
Felicity. I would think that you would have wondered, can I get this kind of work?
Yeah, I mean, I was. I was definitely surprised that they... Definitely surprised they wanted me for it. But I guess... I don't know. I think at the heart, it was really this kind of... this marriage relationship story.
Yeah.
And I think there was something about that I really understood. And, like, that was my in to the story. And kind of like with Felicity, I just feel like I got it. Like, I understood what it was.
Well, tell me about how playing so many roles within roles revealed the acting process to you. Did it make you think in different terms about what acting was?
Well, that was such a cool part of the show and such an interesting part because it only allowed you... Well, it was sort of this incredible cheat that you got to reveal parts of your character that you want to sort of reveal, but in this fake way. Like, so with... If you were playing a character within the show.
Right. And we should say for the one person that hasn't seen
this.
Yes,
sorry.
You're a Russian spy. You're married to another Russian spy. Yeah. There was an arranged marriage.
Right.
That turned into a real marriage. You have kids. You are constantly...
You're doing great.
Am I doing good?
Yeah.
You're constantly putting on different disguises and playing different people to get information, which sometimes requires doing some very nefarious or sexually... things outside what a normal marriage would accept. And oftentimes, you're bringing back characters multiple times, disguises multiple times, and living double and triple lives.
Right.
Through the course of trying to also...
raise children.
Raise children and live across the street from an FBI agent.
And run a travel agency.
It's an amazing show. So tell me about that. I guess I interrupted you to tell to tell, you know, what the show is. But
well, what's cool about it is you, in playing those different characters, you get to show vulnerabilities or cracks that you wouldn't normally show as that main character because you're trying to, you're with someone new. So you get to be kind of a different person and therefore say something more honest in a way that Elizabeth may not say
right.
to Philip. But it seems so crazy and to play all these different characters, but the truth is, I really feel it's simpler than that. You know, we all have different versions of ourselves for other people. Like, you could take the same story of an accident you got in, and you would tell your mom a version that might be very different than you'd tell your four
right.
guy friends at the bar after
You might leave out the beer you were shotgunning.
Right? You might leave that out.
Right.
Like, it's just, it's kind of more that. You know, like, I feel like you turn the volume up on certain parts of yourself for certain things, and you turn the volume down on certain things. You
so it's about modulating.
Yeah, and also, these other characters, these other people, are really less characters and more there for the creation of that other person. So it's all, it's really those people who create them. So, because you need something from them. So you need them to feel a certain way. Like, my sole job and my whole person is going to be to make you feel wanted. Like, so I'm going to do everything I can to make you feel wanted so that you give me what I want.
Right.
Like, or I need you to feel scared. Like, so my whole character is just going to be to intimidate you. Or, you know what I mean?
Well,
so
that's a great, yeah, there's a great example in the final season. You play two very contrasting characters. You play a sort of a in-home hospice worker that's trying to.
She's very attractive. I like that lady. I love that lady.
Like a red wig. Actually, she looks like my mom in this.
She's amazing.
My mom had the perm and the big glasses.
I send pictures of myself. When I put that outfit on, I text pictures to my girlfriends in New York, and they die laughing. They're like, please wear that out. Please.
I'm okay. Like, I got to get into all that because because in that same story arc, you also play like a sexy Mrs. Robinson figure to this young aide of a senator.
Yeah.
And you know, you're this corporate consultant, like cultured New York woman who's, you know, drinking whiskey neat and seducing young
right,
men.
Right.
And what made me curious was that I wonder how much you try to build in your own head of who, like, who that hospice character is and how much you have to know, oh, now I'm this person and this person would
it
do
depends.
This.
It depends. I don't know. And I, Matthew and I talk about it a lot, but I always feel like the best ones are just versions of yourself because the best liars are telling, it's better if you, it's closer to the truth. It's just like a little bit off.
Right.
Because it's going to sound more truthful. So, if you create some character that's like so wacky, like he has a limp and an eye patch and all, like it's going to be harder to keep recreating. So it's better to do something closer to home, I feel like, so that it's sort of, but we all have, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, is it intuitive? Is it sort of like when you put on the wig and the glasses and you look in the mirror?
Sort of.
You know that
lady?
The
disguise does a lot.
It does.
It
How do you work that? Like when you start to develop what the disguise is and you see it on yourself for the first time, how do you, like, take that out for a test ride?
Well, you mostly laugh because they're all so ridiculous.
Yeah.
There's, like, a serious amount of laughing. And then you kind of put on the glasses and the hair and then costume and you know, it's just different. I mean, clothes make you feel so different. Or, like, for Elizabeth, I always wore this super, like, hardcore cat eye and had my hair, like, always blown out and had these, like, very kind of silk shirts, like, very adult, sassy clothes. And you walk different. You're, like, a different person than, like, yeah, I know I'm dressed up right now, but I don't really dress like this. Like, when I'm taking my kids to school, no one looks twice at me. You know what I mean? I'm in my whatever jeans, my Birkenstocks. I don't walk the same. Like, you know, you're different. So I think clothes and the way you look really changes the way you feel. When I wear that home care lady.
Yeah. Like with, she's sort of got like a sort of a nurse comfy suit.
I'm wearing a lot of elastic waist pants.
Yeah.
Some really cool sneakers, a really bad permed wig. And we would shoot that character in Ditmas Park, Brooklyn at this house. And I would like for lunch, go to the grocery store wearing that. And it was amazing.
Like
it was amazing. I was an invisible person. Like, people don't even look twice at you. It was amazing. It was so fun.
Well, tell me about that, because I would think for someone who we talked about earlier who went through that explosion of fame on Felicity, I would think the very thing you're talking about, like, oh, I just want to, you know, when you see those girls in the movie theater,
right.
I just want to disappear. Right. Is there some sort of wish fulfillment in walking out in disguise?
Yeah, I guess so. It's fun. It's totally fun.
Do you find that people treat you differently? Even people that know you're in a costume, like on the crew, when you're that woman, are the interactions slightly different?
Totally.
They are?
Of course.
So what do you learn from that?
That men like really bad blonde dyed hair. I was like, seriously?
So you did better as the Mrs. Robinson consultant.
Wow. Like, this is, like, the catering dudes gave me so much attention when I was wearing this terrible blonde, like, Barbie
right.
wig. I was like, this? Okay, let me see how it goes. Oh, can I help you? Can I get you anything? I was like, okay.
And then you're the other woman, and they're like, do you have a broom?
Yeah, they're like, extras can't eat yet. This is for our crew.
Would that ever happen?
I'm part of the crew.
Where actually people didn't know?
Yes.
See, but I would think that would be
so
fun.
I'm a part of the crew.
And then you'd have them fired immediately.
I was like, he's gone. He's out. I don't want to see his face again. No.
So when you go out, do you think you're learning stuff? Like when you go out to the grocery store?
Wearing that, I sort of feel like I'm wearing sunglasses because I get to watch people and people aren't watching me. So it's kind of cool.
I think that would be a hard thing about being an actor when you get some fame, is that you get to stop people watching.
I think it's a problem. I mean, I'm not that famous, and I don't want to be. I'm like in this perfect spot of like, sometimes people treat me nice at a restaurant, but most of the times people are like, who cares? And I think it's a problem. I think as actors, like, you want to know how people feel or
right.
how they look, and I think if you don't get to live in the world, that I don't understand what you're understanding. Do you know what I mean? Unless you're
totally.
Only playing astronauts on Mars, like that are alone.
Yeah.
That might work.
I would think that by nature, you're probably a pretty observant person who tunes into conversations, right?
Right.
And you wouldn't want to be caught stalking somebody as Carrie Russell.
That'd be a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, we know you're listening. Can you stop? I'm like, oh. I just went on a few trips on my own. That was kind of my treat to myself after finishing the show. I had this really amazing trip to Lisbon, and I was on my own for about 4 days, and then my guy came and met me for the last 2 days of it, and then before coming and doing my LA work here, I went to San Francisco by myself for a night, and I always bring a book to the bar, like at a good restaurant, sit and read.
Order
a steak.
Don't check your phone.
And then drove down to Big Sur, and you listen to people all the time, where I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that being on The Americans would be an interesting social experiment to play that many different characters and have that many different
right.
reactions.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
What I was curious about is if we ever as viewers got to see who Elizabeth really was. Do you think in some ways the character that you knew or created or played, in some ways you never really showed her all the way? Like, was there always...
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a truth to that. Yes, she wasn't, I wouldn't say, you know, like, Philip was so hard on his sleeve all the time, and I think that's why people related to him, and he was a good friend, and I think, Elizabeth didn't ever have that, but that's what I sort of liked about her. She was uncomfortable. I think you see pieces of it, and I think she certainly wanted that with Philip, and feels on some level she has it, like she's doing the best she can. I think that's Elizabeth's main thing. She's doing the best she knows how. Like, to her, that is, you know, being, like, that is her version of herself. And
yeah.
I think you see it a lot more with Paige, like...
Your daughter on the show.
Sorry. Yeah, with the daughter on the show. I think Paige revealed a lot of, or helped Elizabeth reveal, maybe not always in the best ways, but
she saw her,
she
maybe.
She forced her to reveal parts of herself.
Right, right.
The way kids do. They, like, unravel you. Or they, you know, they bring out weird parts of you.
I think that that's one of the most mysterious things about what actors do, is this transition between what's written on the script and what ends up being this person. And is that mysterious to you, that this, the way that Elizabeth came into being and now has a whole life that people can debate and talk about?
It's so weird.
Because it's not all by design, right? Some of it...
Yeah, there's sort of a weird mystery and alchemy to it all. You know, like, I don't know, what did they create? What did I create? What do people perceive? You know, someone wrote something, so now everyone perceives that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's a weird alchemy to it, and I think that's okay and cool, you know? I think things are better when there's a little not knowing about something.
Yeah. How did this show change the way you will look at what you want to do in the future?
This is a tough one to beat, just because it's such a good one, especially for a girl. It's a good part.
Yeah.
It was like the character just got to be so unwavering for so long. Like, usually with these kind of not less likable, but you know what I mean. She has a very strong personality, and they usually soften it quicker than they did on this show. Like, she got to maintain that the whole time.
Right, there wasn't this, oh, we got to keep it popular and keep... Because I think that's maybe old thinking of...
It is.
Of we have to make our characters likable.
Yeah, it was such a good part. You know, it was like, we had such a good run. I think a lot of it has to do also with kind of the chemistry with Matthew too. He's such a good actor, and he raised my game so much. Like, it's like a tennis match, and you're kind of only as good as your opponent. And I feel like he really raised my game getting to work with him.
He raised your game so much you fell in love with him.
Yeah. The disguises didn't hurt either.
What was that like to find out I'm falling in love with my co-star on this show?
I don't know, pretty fun.
How long did you keep it a secret?
I think people pretty much know.
Oh, really? There's no hiding.
I think they're like... I think what Tommy Schlamme said one time, who's a director.
Yeah.
It was one of
probably the most famous television directors of all time.
I love him so much. And we had to do some very explicit scene together that he had to direct. And he was like, oh, this might... He was talking to the script supervisor, and he was like, well, this might be kind of awkward. Let me see how this goes. And we kind of did it and just did it right away. And he said, he turned to the script supervisor and went, these two have definitely fucked. He's like, they're way too comfortable together.
So funny. Well, on that note, I just have loved watching you
in this show. Thank you so much. And I was so
looking forward to meeting you.
Oh, thanks so much. Hopefully some of it was, like, decipherable. I'm a little hungover. I'm like...
Good to know.
I was like, can I get through this? What is he asking me? Yeah.
Well, it is early. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey folks, that's our show. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And if you haven't yet watched The Americans, I suggest you stop what you are doing right now, start with season 1, and go all the way through 6 seasons. It'll blow your mind. It's a great series, and I, for one, am going to be sad that it's not coming back on next season. So check that out. And unlike The Americans, the off-camera show is not going anywhere. So if you want to see all of our episodes, go to offcamera.com. I know you're listening to this podcast, but if you haven't yet tried the television show, it's a great way to dive deep into the experiences of these iconic artists that appear on the show. For only $4.99 a month, you can get our monthly subscription and have access to over 150 episodes of Off Camera to watch on any device at any time in glorious 4K black and white. So if you haven't checked out the TV show, or if you don't have DirecTV's Audience Network,
Get yourself an off-camera monthly subscription and treat yourself to the stories, the wisdom, and the advice of these amazing artists. And while you're signing up for your monthly subscription, head on over to the off-camera store. We make an exclusive magazine for every guest that comes in the show, and it's a great way to experience off-camera in print. You can see my photographs that we take of every guest and read an unedited version of our conversation. The magazine is a great way to support the show and a different way to experience off-camera. We have digital versions and print versions, so check that out. We also have a few copies left of Off-Camera, The Portraits, which is a limited edition coffee table book, just 275 pages of photographs of all the artists that have appeared on the show. It makes a great gift and a great addition to your coffee table. And if you order one today and send me an email, sam@offcamera.com, I will inscribe it to you or to a friend or to your mom or whoever you want me to inscribe it to, and you can have your own personalized copy of this limited edition book. So check that out. And I mentioned my email, but I also want to let you know that I love hearing from listeners. So if you want to tell me what you're doing with your life creatively, or suggest a guest for the show, or if you just have something you want to get off your chest, send me an email. Tell me what you think. I'm sam@offcamera.com. You can also find us on social media. We are Off Camera Show at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And I am Sam Jones on Twitter and Sam Jones Pictures on Instagram. So don't keep us a secret. Tell all your friends about Off Camera, and tell all the people you don't know about Off Camera. Isn't that what social media is all about? I want to thank everybody that works on this show. We could not put a show out each week without the talented, hardworking folks that I'm about to mention. There's Crawford Shippey, Nathan Shields, Michaela Galvin, Sasha Snow, Kara Johnson, and the elusive and oft-injured Matt Davidson. We cannot make a show without these people. So when you see them on the street, just give them a big hug, give them a kiss, buy them a hot dog. You know, show the love. And speaking of showing the love, come back next time to Off Camera, because we have an incredible guest next week. I'm sitting down with actress Betty Gilpin, better known to some of you as Liberty Bell on Netflix's series Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, or GLOW, if you prefer acronyms.
There's a moat of self-loathing, shame, I'm the worst, da, 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 da. And then in the middle of that moat, there's like a person who's a centimeter tall who's like, I think if someone gave me the chance, I think I could be special. Actually, no, I know I could. But like surrounded by a million people being like, you're the worst thing that ever happened ever. But I was like, just give yourself the chance this once. Shut down the moat of self-loathing and just let that centimeter tall person drive for 1 second.
It wasn't always spandex, hairspray, and kick-ass roles for Betty, who describes a lot of her past characters as Voldemort drag Barbies who didn't get to show their monster soup. If you're confused about that, maybe you need to meet Ingrid St. Rash and Cheryl Manila, two of the many personalities in Betty's head. Throw in a toothpaste-eating witch and some bug notes, and it adds up to one of the most intimate and honest conversations about self-esteem, creativity, and female empowerment we have ever had on this show. See you next time, off camera.